From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. You could win a pair of tickets to the 16th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series. This series includes a performance by the Yellow Jackets in Eureka Springs. Sons of Brazil will perform at 21C Hotel in Bentonville, and the Composer's Showcase will be performed at Walton Art Center. The winner will be announced June 13th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and more information are available at KUAF.com.
Ahead on Ozarks, an update on HIV services in Northwest Arkansas. Christina Carnatz has that story. And Antoinette reviews the music of St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
First, Senator John Bozeman of Arkansas says he will seek re-election in 2 years. The announcement came on the senator's first day back in his Washington office after undergoing emergency heart surgery in April. Doctors in Rogers had diagnosed him with a torn aorta. Senator Bozeman says he's made a good recovery.
Feeling really well. I had a great team of doctors. I've had lots of prayers, lots of support and things, and so because of that, I've taken my time, I've done what the doctors have told me, and so, I've eased back in and yet now are ready to go back to work.
Senator Bozeman was first elected to the Senate in 2010 after representing Arkansas's 3rd District in the House for a decade.
Arkansas-based Tyson Foods is the winner in a bidding war for Hillshire Brands with an offer of $63 per share. Tyson and Pilgrim's Pride had been bidding for the prepared meats company. Tyson announced yesterday it had the winning bid with an offer worth $8.5 billion. Roby Brock with Talk Business and Politics says this will give Tyson even more dominance.
You could say that Tyson Foods is literally the king of the hill. The Springdale-based meat giant has acquired Hillshire Brands, which makes Jimmy Dean sausage and Ballpark Franks, for a staggering $8.5 billion. It is a massive deal that really puts Tyson in a bigger position at the retail end of the food chain, particularly in the breakfast food category, which is a growing food segment. Soon, when you shop at Kroger or Harps after this deal closes, you're likely to be buying more Tyson food products, whether you know it or not.
He says the deal does entail some risk for Tyson Foods.
It's a big, big price tag, and analysts are skeptical that it could weigh down Tyson's earnings, which have returned to profitability in the last couple of years. Tyson says it can squeeze about $300 million a year in efficiencies out of the buyout. Tyson also says it would be willing to issue more shares if necessary to finance the deal. And there could also be some new markets for Tyson pork products, which would have some real upside. It's just kind of unclear right now how big that impact could be. Nonetheless, it is a huge bite to take on, and there's no question that with this deal, Tyson Foods has reasserted its dominance as one of the biggest food players on the planet.
In a statement, Tyson President and CEO Donnie Smith said the acquisition of Hillshire Brands will be a defining moment for the company.
The GOP runoff for the party's candidate for Arkansas Attorney General is today. Leslie Rutledge, a Little Rock attorney and former legal counsel for the Republican National Committee, is facing David Sterling, an attorney from North Little Rock. Polls are open until 7:30 this evening, and you can find where your polling place is by visiting the Arkansas Secretary of State's website at voterview.org.
While one petition has been circulating the state for a potential ballot initiative regarding medical cannabis, another petition drive is underway for a proposed amendment to the Arkansas Constitution to legalize the plant in the state of Arkansas. Robert Reed is the author and sponsor of the Arkansas Hemp and Cannabis Amendment. He says his proposal differs from the Arkansas Medical Cannabis Act.
The medical marijuana issue is strictly a medical cannabis issue, and it's a state statute, and it only covers medical use. Mine is a constitutional amendment that will change the Arkansas Constitution to allow the citizens of Arkansas to grow, produce, manufacture, and sell the cannabis plant and all of its products.
The proposed amendment, which is 6 sentences long, contains language distinguishing between hemp and cannabis. Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel approved the wording of the proposed amendment last week, and Reed says the issue is receiving some support.
The petitions hit the street Saturday morning about 11, and we've already got our first batches waiting for me to pick up that was garnered in Van Buren County over the weekend at the, I believe it was the Shirley Homecoming. But there's already additional social media sites set up supporting it. And our drop-dead date to have them filed, our delivery date is July 7th.
Reed says that gives supporters of the issue fewer than 3 weeks to submit more than 78,000 valid signatures to the Arkansas Secretary of State's office.
On this program in February, we featured the Woodland Junior High Quiz Bowl team as it prepared to head to the Arkansas Governor's Quiz Bowl Association State Championship. Yesterday, the Woodland team took first place in the Junior Nationals Academic Championship in Chicago. The nine-person team bested 25 of the top Quiz Bowl teams in the nation to take the title of National Quiz Bowl Champions.
Beginning today, a new shooting range is open in the Big Piney Ranger District of the Ozark National Forest. Grand opening was held this morning for the Shelton Point Shooting Range near the Deer community in Newton County. According to the Big Piney Ranger District, the shooting range offers a place for enthusiasts to safely practice pistol and rifle shooting, and the site is equipped with covered benches and a 100-yard range. The shooting range, which is located off of Highway 327, was developed through cooperation of the Newton County Sheriff's Office, the Newton County Judge, and the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission.
Former Razorback gymnast Jamie Pisani is now assistant coach for the Arkansas team. Head coach Mark Cook made the announcement yesterday. She was a 13-time All-American at Arkansas.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals find themselves in an unusual place for this season, in the midst of a winning streak. The Nats defeated the Arkansas Travelers twice in North Little Rock last night to run their current winning streak to 3 games. Northwest Arkansas plays at Arkansas again tonight.
Tonight's weather forecast calls for partly cloudy conditions with a 70% chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low of 55 in Northwest Arkansas. There's a slight chance of showers and a low of 59 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, expect mostly sunny skies with highs from 81 to 86, and tomorrow night we'll have partly cloudy skies with lows in the lower 60s. More than 1.1 million people in the United States are living with the human immunodeficiency virus, or HIV, the virus that leads to AIDS. Almost a quarter of those are unaware of their infection. The Southeast region of the U.S. accounts for 40% of those affected, with Arkansas receiving the least amount of federal HIV/AIDS funding of any southern state. The AIDS epidemic officially began in 1981, and as Ozark's at-largest Christina Karnatz uncovered, much has changed in support and treatment in the 33 years since.
The 2013 film Dallas Buyers Club was a reminder of what little was known about HIV and AIDS in the 1980s. At the time, there was little support for researching and finding treatment, leaving many of those affected to die. Though a cure has yet to be discovered or developed, treatments have advanced to a point where those affected can live mostly normal lives, their affliction unknown to the rest of the community. In 1991, Washington County had the highest case rate of HIV in the state of Arkansas. That's according to a nurse at the Washington County HIV Clinic. Renee Gaston was there when the clinic opened in 1992 and continues to work there today.
Used to. The patients were very sick. Mm-hmm. It was horrible. But now they have a chance. If they will take their medicine and do what the doctor says, they have a long life expectancy.
In 1995, a new class of medications was introduced called protease inhibitors. The disease then becoming treatable and manageable. The staff of just three at the county clinic, plus a doctor, ensures that over 600 patients receive and are taking these medications today. Dr. Linda McGee is the founding doctor at the clinic and has long been one of the only HIV doctors in the area and the state. And though the county clinic might be intended for those with lower incomes, many with private insurance receive care just to see Dr. McGee. She was unavailable for comment, but sees patients 2 afternoons a week, Mondays and Wednesdays. The clinic remaining open and busy all 5 working days. Debbie Zimmerman is the clinic's nurse and often acts as a social worker as well, as funding does not allow one on staff. She says about 5 or 6 patients will walk in daily when the clinic is not actively seeing patients, and she receives phone calls throughout the day, every day.
They're sick. They need refills. I don't have any money for something. How can I get it? They just need somebody to talk to. You know, if they're new, they're usually pretty upset.
Michael Burks is HIV positive and was sitting in this very clinic, which also sees patients from Benton County, when he was newly diagnosed and he experienced those fears. Michael is now the president of HIV Arkansas and recalls when he first heard of the support organization.
And I was in the clinic one day and I overheard two people talking about this group. And I thought, okay, maybe that's something that I need to check into. Because I felt all alone. I felt isolated. I didn't know who to talk to, didn't know where to go, didn't know what to do next.
The volunteer-run organization was founded in 2004, and one of their main goals is to provide a social network for HIV patients through groups and gatherings.
Folks that, particularly people that are newly diagnosed, they want to stay in, they don't want to be social because they just feel shamed. So one of our goals is to provide an outlet for them to really stay in the social network and be out among people that are like them, and help them feel more comfortable with their diagnosis.
Another goal of HIV Arkansas is education, with testing being the number one component. Michael says that all sexually active people should be tested. Just like Matthew McConaughey's character in Dallas Buyers Club learns, anyone can contract the disease, not just those in a high-risk category, i.e., an IV drug user or a homosexual male. Testing at many locations in the area is free, including next door to the Washington County HIV Clinic inside the County Health Department. And if you were to receive a positive result,
get connected with the right resources, and that would be a doctor that is specializing in HIV. As far as I'm understanding, there are three in this area, one in the Bentonville area, Rogers area, and then two in Fayetteville.
Unlike treatment 30 years ago, which often meant taking up to 40 pills a day, Michael says it's pretty simple these days.
They will prescribe medication for you. It's not like in the Dallas Buyers Club, it was tons of medication that they had to purchase. And they had to take several pills a day, probably several times a day. And they've developed drugs that are, you may take three pills a day, you know, once a day. So it's a lot better than it used to be. The side effects are nothing at all like they used to be.
Proper treatment today means living a long and full life. Far gone are the days of skinny patients bearing skin lesions and pale skin. Treatment is also important, as those patients whose viral loads are suppressed do not transmit the virus as readily as those that are untreated. The HIV Arkansas website states that Arkansas has one of the highest rates of those living with HIV who are not receiving regular treatment. It's around 70%, much higher than surrounding states and national rates. Fear being the biggest barrier to testing and treatment. But there are also financial concerns for many. Treatment, Michael says, can cost between $3,000 and $3,500 each month. The hope is that the Affordable Care Act will alleviate some of these worries. Living in a rural area can also be a problem. As he mentioned, there are just three full-time HIV doctors in the Northwest Arkansas area, which has around 500,000 residents. Deborah, who declined to give her last name, lives in Baxter County. She is also HIV positive.
I have to drive about an hour and 45 minutes to see my doctor. So my personal mission is to try and bring knowledge to the local doctors in my area so that they will see the need and the number of positive patients in this area. So that possibly in the future we could get someone locally to provide us with care.
She estimates there are just over 30 people living with HIV in her county. Deborah is a member of the governor's HIV task force and, as such, participates in monthly conference calls with people holding similar aspirations. She has been a member for just over a year and is beginning to see some progress.
The changes have been small, but they are positive changes. In my particular area, we're now having monthly support meetings, which are extremely helpful to the HIV community, because being HIV positive, you do not have the freedom to discuss your status with everyone. so that provides a forum where we can sit and talk with one another, whether it be about our medications or whatever.
Deborah, obviously female and not in the high-risk categories for HIV we mentioned earlier, was married and only partaking in sexual activities with her husband. Just under 5 years ago, she learned that her unfaithful, now ex-husband, had tested positive. She was tested immediately and says that early detection was a blessing. Like Deborah, Danny Harris did not see himself at risk. He was the victim of a violent crime that led him to become HIV positive. He also says that status has turned out to be a godsend, though he lost much.
Because what it's allowed me to do is to figure out and find purpose and significance in my life. And it's also offered me the opportunity to share that purpose and significance with other people. And by that I mean that especially in the early stages of diagnosis, there's a lot of darkness involved in a person's life. There's a lot of confusion, a lot of turmoil. And that can continue in a person's life, it can continue endlessly unless there's a moment when the light switch is turned on. And I try to be that light switch. I try to be that moment of light and brightness in a person's life to help remove that darkness, or at least to find their path through that darkness.
Danny is now the statewide outreach coordinator for R-CARES Division of Special Services. The organization is based in Augusta, Arkansas, and at heart is a community wellness organization with 31 health clinics across the state. Now, they have 14 offices around the state that do HIV case management. Like many who have been freshly diagnosed, Danny didn't know where to turn. But it was actually finding the support group within HIV Arkansas that led him to his job. Since his start almost 10 years ago, our care services have expanded greatly, and Danny now spends much of his time driving around the state, visiting with patients and the 14 case managers who disperse medications, test members of the community, and offer support services. As the others have mentioned, Danny reiterates that getting tested is the most important thing that someone can do for themselves and for others. He says there are 250 to 300 known newly diagnosed cases each year in the state of Arkansas. He cites a CDC method for determining those that don't know they're positive, saying that 22% of all HIV cases don't know they have it. That puts Arkansas's numbers between 1,500 and 2,000 people in the state.
They just don't get tested. And for a lot of reasons. Some people just don't want to know. And I'm surprised at the number of people I encounter that say, I don't want to know. Because there's responsibilities to that. And if I've got it, I'm just going to get sick and die. And it's not that at all anymore.
Danny himself began to see symptoms that led him to get tested.
You know, we had the act of violence that occurred, and just like clockwork, 6 months later, I started getting ill. I started getting sick. I started showing flu-like symptoms that I couldn't get rid of. I had some skin splotches, and I lost some weight real quickly. And I've never been real good at losing a lot of weight real quickly, but at that point, I did. It was time for my annual physical, so I asked the doctor while we were doing the physical if he could also do the HIV test. So he did the test, and sure enough, it was there.
But his numbers were good, and his immune system was holding its own. And today, Danny looks like any other person. He lost much, including his wife, with the diagnosis. But he continues to see it as a blessing, as he has found his calling in helping others, helping them to feel normal living with HIV. Here's Michael Burks.
People that are HIV positive are just like normal people. There may be your neighbor may be positive, someone across the street, someone that you work with. They look normal. They act normal.
And when Debbie Zimmerman, the nurse at the Washington County HIV Clinic, receives criticism from peers and friends for what she does.
I've had nurses, not so much lately, but in the past, you know, and different people say, how can you work with them? It's like, well, how do you know you're not?
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Karnatz.
For more information on the organizations involved in this story or how to receive an HIV test, visit our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
In about 8 minutes on Ozarks, the history of allies spying on each other is long and deep.
The British had all the provocation they needed now to shift American public opinion, because by the next day, they had decoded enough of this message to know exactly what it was.
Our history doctor, Bill Smith, gives us a partial listing of how Americans, British, and others have collaborated together, and sometimes independently, to gather information from others, friend, and foe. That conversation ahead on OAL.
When Eleanor Longdon got to college, she started to hear voices.
And they don't sound like me, so some of them are male, some of them sound quite young, some of them have different accents.
And they would drive her crazy, until she started talking back to them.
The voices have ultimately become partners in that healing process.
I'm Guy Raz. Stories of Overcoming, that's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
It begins Sunday at noon on 91.3 FM.
If you want to participate in a 5K run or a long bike ride, all you have to do around here is wait for the next Saturday. But not everybody wants to run or get on a bike. The nonprofit organization Bridges to Wellness in Siloam Springs has designed a way to introduce or reintroduce people to exercise, even if running or biking is not part of the plan. WellFest, scheduled for this Saturday at Bob Henry Park in Siloam Springs, will have running and biking elements, but other ways to move too, like volleyball, yoga, taekwondo. Emerson Goodwin, the executive director of Bridges to Wellness, says Saturday's slew of events is billed as a day in motion.
Well, as a health network trying to promote physical activity and better nutrition, we thought we needed a call to action to get people excited about embracing physical activity. As you know, too many of us don't get enough physical activity. We're trying to say, well, listen, we don't really care whether you walk, run, cycle, whatever it is you like to do to get movement. Come on out on this day. Let's bill it as a day in motion and see if we can get you reconnected to the cornerstone of good health, which is physical activity. And then we have culinary delights. And so we come in and have a cooking demonstration of healthy food so that we can learn how to prepare, order out, and purchase good quality food for ourselves.
Sitting in his office in downtown Siloam Springs last week, Emerson Goodwin explained how the mission of the nonprofit organization has two tentpoles: get people moving and get people eating better. Almost a year ago, Bridges to Wellness opened an outdoor gym in Siloam Springs, a free, casual way to get a workout without having to travel too far. Saturday's WellFest takes some of those same concepts, like a low or no-cost approach and a no-intimidation layout, and then adds a we're-in-this-together element.
The research shows that people are more likely to get started, stay at it, and come back to it if they stop their behavior change around physical activity or better nutrition, if they do it with a team. And so this whole idea is to set the team, get the team in motion, get the community in motion.
There are chances to compete at WellFest: an individual and corporate 5K run, 10 and 50-mile bicycle rides, and a sand volleyball tournament, and, new for this year, a 3-on-3 basketball tournament. But other events are competition and registration free, except for the competition that you could have with yourself. Goodwin says he hopes there will be some participants at WellFest using the day as a springboard to keep track of how easy it is to incorporate some amount of physical activity even into a busy lifestyle.
If you're on the couch and that has been your home, but you don't want it to be your home, then let's put on some tennis shoes. Doesn't have to be fancy. Walk out the door, turn right, walk down 10 minutes, come back 10 minutes. That's a 20-minute walk. Can we do that 3, 4, 5 times a week? Then can we expand it? Can we do more? Because it's essentially the formula is eat better, move more.
This sort of communal effort takes a buy-in, of course. Anybody driving through Siloam Springs in the past couple of weeks could see evidence that there has been a big buy-in on the front end of this year's WellFest. Almost every store has a poster in its window, and just about every bank marquee or digital sign is a reminder of the event. Emerson Goodwin says a large participation ride Saturday can mean good things for the city, even beyond better health.
When people get out and they're walking and running, doing yoga and taekwondo and all the things that goes on, there's 15 different events in this one day, that you have an opportunity to connect on a different level than if everybody's coming in and they're behind their desk or they're focused on their job that day. Health is a great equalizer.
He quickly adds WellFest is open to people who live outside of Siloam's city limits. Last year, people from surrounding cities, Oklahoma, and even further away came to WellFest. Part of the attraction is not just the moving, but the cooking. Area chefs, including two from nearby 28 Springs Restaurant and a dietitian, will offer four free cooking demonstrations on the hour from 9 a.m. until noon.
We get to see how we can make different changes in foods that we eat, and we can cut down on salt, sugar, and calories.
Registration for the runs, the bike rides, and tournaments is available online at bridgestowellness.org. There is also a Facebook page. Early registration discounts expire at the end of business tomorrow. In addition to the events already mentioned, there are classes or demonstrations in yoga, CrossFit training, Zumba, pickleball, and taekwondo, even, in fact,
hula hoop, even. And it's a blast. I can't hula, but it's still fun watching people and trying to learn. Everybody laughs when I try.
Emerson Goodwin is the executive director of Bridges to Wellness in Siloam Springs. The organization hosts the 2014 edition of WellFest Saturday at Bob Henry Park in Siloam Springs from 7 a.m. until early afternoon. And there is a direct link to even more information, including diagrams of the race courses, at our website, ozarksatlarge.com. It is Tuesday, June 10th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Channeling Kevin Kinder, our What's Up music writer.
And a good guide to know...
to anything about music, yes, that I know nothing about. He says that Charles Ragsdale calls it the goosebump factor.
And Charles is in Eureka, helps with the Blues Fest, things like that.
And Charles says if an artist he watches doesn't elicit goosebumps, he's not cut out for the Eureka Springs Blues Weekend, which starts Thursday.
Well, that's a high bar.
That's a high bar. Well, he's got amazing people. He's got Chubby Carrier and the Bayou Swamp Band.
I have seen them. Personal thumbs up. They're great.
In support of New Orleans musician Walter Wolfman Washington.
Who is fantastic.
He's also got the Brandon Santini Band, Carolyn Wonderland with Moreland and Arbuckle, Brickfields and the Chosen Ones, mm-hmm, Lucius Spiller, mm-hmm, Fast Johnny Ricker, and a benefit for Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge on Sunday, Brickfields with the Stacy Mitch Hart Band.
A lot of good stuff there.
Wow. And I've got to see Wolfman Washington. This is something I have not done and really must do. This starts Thursday and runs through the 15th all over Eureka Springs. $75 for a four-day pass.
That's pretty inexpensive.
Compared to Wakarusa.
Or just about any festival.
Yeah, very inexpensive. Individual show ticket prices vary, and you can find out more at eurekaspringsblues.com.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me back in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio after some time away is our history doctor, Bill Smith. Welcome back.
Glad to be back.
The concept of this whole idea is that history, if it doesn't repeat itself, there are lessons to be learned, and they're often very contemporary.
Or the mistakes are very contemporary.
Yes, there you go. Well, let's talk about one of our favorite subjects. The last few times we've talked, Edward Snowden and his role. Was just at via a video link, of course, at South by Southwest. He continues to reveal where he can with a TED talk about the American spy work. And the media is shocked to learn what the government is doing in our name. So,
once again, our digital world has a few historic analogs, to make a double pun.
So, presentism, the focus of our media, letting this never-before moment overshadow the past, right?
Well, you really don't have to look much further than the nonfiction bestseller rack to see that our country was founded by one of the great spy masters, George Washington.
Yes.
Because his colonial era intelligence network was key to the revolution. I could give you, though, two very direct examples of the there's nothing new today, each one of them just about a century old.
Just before World War I, then?
Well, indeed. Actually, right after World War I.
Okay.
So just
okay.
about a
okay.
century old. There is something to be considered about the consequential effort of code breaking, for example, in the Zimmermann Note.
Germany, Mexico, U.S., right, all in there?
Exactly. The Imperial German government had proposed an alliance with Mexico if the U.S. joined the Allies during the First World War. Because remember, we were neutral in thought as well as deed under
right.
Woodrow Wilson until after his election or his re-election in 1916. So in return for opening up a southern front on the United States, Germany would assist Mexico in regaining its lost lands of the Southwest dating back to the Mexican War of 1845. So
Texas, New Mexico,
California. Exactly. The German embassy in Washington, D.C. would receive this coded telegram and then forward it on to the ambassador in Mexico City. The message was sent on January 16th, 1917.
January 16th, 1917, and decoded or broken sometime thereafter?
Utilizing their code-breaking team in an interception point in the transatlantic cable known as Room 40.
Room 40.
Yeah, some of these things begin to sound a little bit like modern day. The British had all the provocation they needed now to shift American public opinion because by the next day, they had decoded enough of this message to know exactly what it was.
By the next day?
By the next day. However, here's the problem. If we reveal the cable, we reveal Room 40's existence.
You don't want to do that.
No. So initially, there was an elaborate cover to try to involve bribing the Mexican telegraph operator that would have ultimately received this coded message to gain a copy from Mexico City and bring it forward so that they could say, hey, look what we found in Mexico City, not that, hey, guess what we had listened into
right.
on the way to Mexico. So it took a month for the British to assemble what they needed to try to make their play. The other part was they had to convince the Americans that this wasn't elaborate propaganda. So you had to also have a certain amount of proof. So whether or not a forgery was part of this plot, you know, the American ambassador was shown a month later in Britain what the Crown knew. And initially he said, well, this can't be true, disbelieved it. Shown both ends of the traffic, though, he eventually relays the findings to President Wilson, who released the message to the newspapers on February 28th. So see the amount of time it took for it to be revealed. Now, of course, that's going to cause, as you might expect, quite a furor in the public. In the end, Germany's Foreign Secretary, Arthur Zimmermann,
right.
of whom the note is known for, admitted to the diplomatic effort in the very first week of March, so we go to war from there.
I was going to say, January it's sent, February it's admitted, public, March then the admission, April
we joined the Allies, and it wasn't the direct impact. I mean, what really gets us going is unrestricted submarine warfare resumption by the Germans at that time with the Unterseeboots, the original U-boats. But this was no small part of changing America's public opinion.
Sure. Here's an effort to get Mexico to declare war on your southern border, that would tend to start to shift public opinion, I would think.
Yes, it would.
But it was the British that intercepted this in Room 40.
That's correct.
Okay. But there's an American involved here?
Well, indeed. The Americans learned from the British. And during the course of the war, and especially at the end of the war, there was the desire to try to start our own code-breaking practice, to start our own listening in on
sure.
telephone and telegraph. And under the guidance of Herbert Yardley, the Cipher Bureau was established in the State Department.
I'm sorry, but that sounds like something I would have come up with when I was like 10, the Cipher Bureau, but go ahead.
Exactly. This is the immediate post-First World War era and a world focused on disarmament. The new president, Warren G. Harding, would bring the superpowers of the day to Washington to discuss reducing the nuclear weapon of the day, naval battleships. So if you're hosting that conference, you'd like to know how far you could push the other side in the negotiations, and there's nothing better than being able to read the other side's diplomatic traffic. So
right.
Yardley's team had broken the Japanese diplomatic code. The Japanese were keen to bring their navy up to par with Great Britain and the United States. But in, you know, arms limitations, we want to keep the Japanese Imperial Navy at a lower level. Yardley's folks were able to tell U.S. negotiators that the arms reduction Japan would accept was a ratio called 5-5-3. U.S. gets 5 battleships, Great Britain gets 5 battleships, Japanese only gets 3.
So if you know what your opponents are willing to do, you'll drive them to that.
It's just like knowing the exact price of the wholesale on that car when you
right.
walk onto the lot. You've got an advantage in the negotiation, and that's exactly the deal that the Washington Naval Conference produced.
So Yardley is the grandfather of the NSA?
Hardly.
Okay. I like to make those connections.
One of the great ironies that relates to today, telegraph companies became less and less willing to give up their diplomatic cables to Yardley's group.
Well,
because then their clients overseas were knowing that the Americans were spying on them. Soon, Henry L. Stimson would be named the Secretary of State for Herbert Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
As he comes in, he discovers some of the things that are going on in the State Department, becomes aware of the Cipher Bureau, and famously declares, "Gentlemen, do not read each other's mail." He cuts funding in 1929, and the Cipher Bureau is done. Yardley is unemployed just in time for the stock market crash. So code breaking went back to the military.
Out of the civilian realm.
Out of the civilian realm. And nothing that approached the previous level that even had been established sort of with Yardley's work. It's not until the Second World War that the U.S. revived and expanded its code work. By the way, something the British had never abandoned.
Yardley, what happened to him?
Well, publishing wasn't quite the same back then, or maybe it was, as it is today. 2 years after Stimson successfully shut down Yardley and the Cipher Bureau, he came out with his own book, The American Black Chamber. And this is how many people really know the Cipher Bureau, is by this sensational label that Yardley gave it through his book. He revealed many of the secrets, the assets, the names of workers, the techniques, and
it became
a worldwide bestseller, notably in Japan.
Oh, my gosh.
The government wanted to prosecute him, but technically he had broken no law because revealing these secrets was not covered by anything. It was such a new art at the time. Now, that gets corrected with a 1933 amendment to the Espionage Act to cover code work done by anyone that had worked for the federal government. Of course, the greatest irony of all in this, when Stimson, serving as the Secretary of War under Franklin Roosevelt,
right,
he was not in a position to read what the Japanese diplomatic traffic would be in November of 1941, leaving us with a great speculative what if.
What if a cable about Pearl Harbor had been read?
Exactly.
Mm.
But I have one more small footnote to this.
Oh, you love your... Okay. Okay, I'm ready.
I'm not sure what is more creepy in this.
Mm-hmm.
In the course of doing the research for today's script, I found some documents that were related to the Zimmerman's note, including a 10-page declassified article from Cryptologic Quarterly.
Okay.
Or the fact that where I found it was in the public documents of the NSA's website, where they have put Herbert Yardley into the Codebreakers Hall of Fame.
Seriously?
Seriously.
So, wait a few decades and let's see what happens?
Exactly.
All right. Well, until the NSA reveals your email password.
We're history.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
School's out for most people, but that doesn't mean educational opportunities are over until August. It just means there are a wide variety of subjects to learn about in a wide array of classrooms. If you're interested in beer making, the Fayetteville Public Library is sponsoring a beer making workshop Saturday afternoon at 2 as part of its Explore Your Senses adult learning series. Bruce McCain from Home Brewery will lead the workshop, and the session at the library is free. Then the class will walk a couple of blocks to West Mountain Brewery to taste a cloned sample of the beer discussed in the forum. No pre-registration is required and the workshop is free. However, there is a cost associated with the tasting at West Mountain.
Hobbs State Park will give you a chance to learn about snorkeling and bats in two different classes this weekend. The snorkeling class will be in Beaver Lake Saturday afternoon from 1 until 3. Registration fee $6. Participants get to keep the snorkel but have to return the mask. The snorkeling takes place in a secluded spot on the lake. Prepayment and a reservation required for Saturday's class. You can call 789-5000 for information. Participants 18 and younger must be accompanied by an adult.
The Bat Encounter at Hobbs is Sunday at 2 p.m. The executive director of the Organization for Bat Conservation will be on hand. He's given similar demonstrations on Ellen, The Today Show, and Late Night with Conan O'Brien. He'll talk about the benefits of bats and introduce you to a big brown bat and let you hear its high-pitched echolocation through a bat detector. You'll also meet a flying fox bat from Malaysia with a 6-foot wingspan. The session is free and open to the public, and more information can be found at the website friendsofhobbs.com.
I'm just curious. I know you don't like snakes, don't like to be around them.
Sure.
Do you have an opinion about bats?
They're fine.
Okay. Just curious. If you want to learn about that thing that lets you learn, your brain, you can go to Orchards Park in Bentonville Saturday afternoon from 1:30 until 3:30 for a Brain Ninja Games event. Organizers promise an entertaining and low-pressure event that includes healthy food and information about the capabilities of the brain, plus cognitive competition. For more information or to register, 715-6870.
Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale will welcome kids from 11 to 14 to the museum for their history camp later this month. The theme is 1900s Arkansas. The camp begins June 25th, and if you want more information, you can call 750-8165 or visit shilohmuseum.org.
Speaking of history, next month you can find out about the longest continuous mail route in the U.S. in the 19th century. The Drennan Scott Historic Site in Van Buren will host the talk as part of the Crawford County Chronicles series at the house. This takes place July 6th. That day there will be two sessions, one at 1:30, another at 3. To make a reservation, call the Drennan Scott House in Van Buren at 262-2750.
Another educational chance this summer is in a conventional classroom setting. An intensive biblical Hebrew class will be offered at the University of Arkansas beginning June 30th. It's the first time in about 15 years such a class will be taught on the UA campus. The course will include relatively new findings about the subtleties of the language included in the Hebrew. The classes will be taught by Jacob Adler, a professor of philosophy who previously taught Hebrew at the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College. The classes will be taught inside Old Main on weekday afternoons. For more information, you can call Jacob at 200-1397.
And if you want to learn more about the new scripts included in the Arkansas New Play Festival in Fayetteville, you can join me at the Fayetteville Public Library tomorrow night at 6. I'll be moderating a conversation about the work, Just Like Us, by playwright Karen Zacharias. And she'll be with me to talk about her play about four Latina girls whose immigration status begins to erode their opportunities. The play is based on the book of the same name by Helen Thorpe. The performance of the script Friday night at Nadine Baum Studios. Our free conversation at the library is tomorrow night at 6. For more information about the Arkansas New Play Festival, you can go to Theater 2. That's the number2.org.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Charmaine Givens Thomas caused a stir at last week's Walmart stockholders meeting.
Something is wrong when the richest family in America pays hundreds of thousands of associates so little they cannot survive.
She's a Walmart employee and a stockholder. We'll talk with her next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen this afternoon from 1 to 3 to 91.3 FM.
Music is so easily accessible and abundant these days that it can be a little overwhelming when you want to seek out new music. One way to grab my attention is with a unique band name, hence my interest in seeing St. Paul and the Broken Bones perform at Wakarusa last week. The Birmingham, Alabama band is currently touring in support of its new album, Half the City. The 12-song project was released in February on Single Lock Records. The album was produced by Ben Tanner of Alabama Shakes, which should come as no surprise as the record has a soulful sound similar to that of the Shakes. Officially, the band is credited as a sextet, but they performed as a seven-piece band last week. Regardless of the band's size, the group's live show is something to behold, thanks in large part to lead singer Paul Janeway's exuberant performance. Wearing black-rimmed glasses, a dark suit with a cream pocket square, and a red button decorated with the word Alabama pinned to his coat, the blonde-haired frontman is anything but imposing. His quick, sheepish smile and calm walk to his microphone on stage present such a subdued entrance that it in no way prepares you for what's coming next. Once Paul starts singing, he never stops moving until the concert is over. He climbs on top of amps and shows off his James Brown-inspired footwork as he belts out lyrics about pain and sorrow that are rife in his songs, including one titled I'm Torn Up. While the wailing is a powerful way to convey the singer's strife, it's best in moderation. According to the band's website, the frontman's handle of St. Paul is a wry allusion to his grounding in the church. The lead singer grew up in a small Alabama town and was raised in a non-denominational, Pentecostal-leaning local church. Paul grew up listening to gospel music, and his goal in life until he was about 18 was to be a preacher. Though his band's music is secular, you can find references to the frontman's religious roots in his music. One example is the song titled It's Midnight.
My mama told me, son, it won't go away. That old heartache, it won't stop the rain. Please just try. Just find the Lord. If you can hear him say, just sit and pray. I've been bad.
Paul played guitar and sang in church, and while he was exposed to key influences in gospel music, he began to diversify his listening by attending open mic nights in Birmingham's clubs. The frontman heard the music of Tom Waits and Nick Cave, and in an interview on the band's website, Paul says they have that passion. They've built this aura. They're showmen to the teeth. And that's what got me. It's like going to church in a weird way. For a time, Paul was a member of a band that played Led Zeppelin covers. His work in rock music introduced him to bassist Jesse Phillips, and they began writing together. One of the results of their collaboration is the song Broken Bones and Pocket Change.
Young love has made me all worn down like shoes. When a car
during his band's first set at Wakarusa, Paul joked about this being one of the band's happier songs. The album does often focus on sad affairs of the heart, like in the track Grass is Greener, where the lead singer begs his love not to leave him.
I know that I've been cold. Baby, I ain't got no soul. I've had those sweet sugar thoughts. They had taken away from me. They came back.
St. Paul and the Broken Bones debut album, Half the City, is a soulful record that, between the horn section and the lead singer's bellows, packs a powerful punch. Sure, the songs focus on heartache, but isn't the tough stuff the best kind to sing about? Paul Janeway's voice is just so impassioned that you can't turn the song off, even if you know it's going to break your heart. Half the City is available now, and the band is currently on tour. More information is available at stpaulandthebrokenbones.com. Oh, this poor and lonely heart, it is made of pure steel, and you can't let it cry.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Pindall.
Where is that?
I think it's Newton County. It might be Madison County. I'd have to look at the atlas specifically, but or maybe it, anyway, it's not a lot of people there.
Sure.
And I always thought if they were big enough for a team of any kind, it should be the Wizards.
Ah, sure.
Yeah. The things I think of.
I know.
Let's see. You spent some time at Wakarusa.
I did.
Did you get rained on?
Yes. I didn't camp this time. The media area for camping seemed to fill up really quickly. I went down, I don't know, early Thursday afternoon, and there really wasn't a place to pitch a tent.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew the weather wasn't going to be great, so just made the decision to drive back and forth. It's not that bad of a drive. It's like 45 minutes from here. Yeah, it's not that far at all. But yeah, Saturday afternoon, I believe. Yes. Yes, we were watching Walk Off the Earth, and in the middle of their set, there was this deluge. And of course, I was prepared, though. I had a raincoat and things like that. So that was good. But other than that, I didn't get caught in any rainstorm. There was some mud and from rain when I wasn't there overnight and things like that. But they did seem a little more prepared this year. They realized that hay wasn't going to do it.
Right.
So there was a lot of gravel and things used to kind of help keep things a little drier and a little less messy than it was last year.
And it didn't seem like it was a constant downpour, like it would rain, but not. Then, and I didn't know if it was necessarily raining, because I did not go in Northwest Arkansas, whether that meant it was raining on Mulberry Mountain or not.
I was keeping in touch with friends who did camp, and a lot of the times when it was raining here, it was in fact raining there. I do know once or twice on the way down, it was raining here, and by the time we got there, it had stopped raining there. So it's just kind of an in-between. Maybe it's going to, maybe it's not going to, but that's, you know.
So now this week is the Eureka Springs Blues Fest. We're going to hear a song from one of the artists in just a moment. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
My name is Winnet Grajeda.
Carolyn Wonderland will perform at the Eureka Springs Blues Weekend Saturday night. She'll be the headliner for that day's Built the City Auditorium. Doors will be at 2 that afternoon. Music begins at 3. Before her, Lucia Spiller, Brick Fields and the Chosen Ones, Moreland and Arbuckle. Carolyn's latest CD is Piecemeal. Many songs on that CD produced by Ray Benson, of course, from Asleep at the Wheel, and Michael Nesmith, the former Monkey. It was recorded in Austin and at Levon Helm Studio in Woodstock. She can burn it up like her cover of Dust My Broom, but she can be a bit more mellow like this song that we'll end the show with, Shine On. More information about the festival at EurekaSpringsBlues.com.
With his one lone star, it's the last sea tonight. The clouds have swallowed up all else in the sky. And mesmerized, I long to say the same light on you, the same light on me.